You're listening to a podcast from 702.
Joining me now is Professor Cheryl Cohen. We've had her on the show before. Cheryl is very busy, and we are grateful that she is making time for us as the co-head of the Center for Respiratory Disease and Meningitis at the National Institute for Communicable Diseases. Cheryl, good morning to you, and welcome back to the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
I want to get straight into the questions. The president's speech last night was critically important. We now need to have a lockdown. From the point of view of the public health crisis that the world is facing, and particularly here in South Africa, our instantiation of it, what does a lockdown enable us to do? What is its point?
Yeah, so I think that that's a great question. And I think, you know, what is really heartening is the really decisive action that has been taken by the president to try and get in early in this outbreak. I think, you know, the listeners will have all seen the evolving situation in a number of different countries in the world. And I think really the idea of a lockdown is to try and slow the spread of the virus. So what we know is that this virus is really spread by contact between people, either by physical touching or if you get within 1 meter of them or 1 to 2 meters, the droplets that could land on you and transmit the virus. And so really the more people mix together, the faster the virus spreads. If we can on average reduce the number of contacts between people, then that gives the virus less and less opportunity to spread between people, and so it keeps the numbers of virus infected people down, and so it slows the rate at which the cases go up, and it hopefully prevents or slows our health systems becoming very, very full and potentially overwhelmed. So the idea is the less people interact, and that's every single person has to do their part to reduce contact between them and others, the less opportunity the virus has to move between us, the less the number of cases, or the slower the number of cases goes up, and the more we flatten the curve and we try to preserve our health services and reduce the impact on the health system.
The World Health Organization's Mike Ryan, Cheryl, said the following about a different location, and I assume the wisdom would apply to us as well. And I quote, "What we really need to focus on is finding those who are sick, those who have the virus, and isolate them, find their contacts and isolate them." If I think about that just intuitively, that suggests to me that a lockdown isn't a solution, it is part of the solution.
Yeah, so absolutely. I think clearly the WHO strategy, you know, has different arms, and the arm that Mike Ryan is referring to in his quote is really the arm of contact tracing, which is really finding cases, getting them to stay at home, identifying their contacts, and getting those contacts to stay at home. And that is, you know, what the WHO is recommending. Well, it's another arm of what the WHO is recommending. I think what needs to be recognized, and again, what is apparent all over the world is that this type of finding every case and then isolating all the contacts is particularly challenging when dealing with a disease like this COVID-19. So because the disease presents non-specifically with respiratory symptoms, and it can in some cases be relatively mild, and people, despite all our awareness, people may not always present to the health services, there are intrinsic challenges in this contact tracing. So contact tracing is important, and it's an important strategy to damp things down. But the type of population level intervention that the president is implementing is equally, if not more, important, because it recognizes that there are intrinsic challenges to contact tracing, and therefore if on average we all reduce our contacts, we can have a population level impact that will flatten the curve. So there are two separate arms of the strategy, and of course we continue with our contact tracing, but the type of intervention the president has suggested and has now implemented is really designed on getting onto top of this virus from a population level, and is expected hopefully to have an impact as a result.
Once we are in lockdown mode, Professor Cohen, should we be doing mass testing?
So So I think there's an effort underway in terms of putting together the plans for testing. I think what is recognized by the WHO is that testing is really a key component of the strategy to control the coronavirus. I think similar to other aspects of this response, though, there are challenges in terms of the availability of testing kits. The ability to upscale or the rate at which testing can be upscaled. So absolutely, there's a plan to rapidly upscale testing, but in a context of really global challenges in terms of available tests and testing supply. And so I think again, absolutely, there will be an effort to expand testing, but in addition, the social distancing and the lockdown is independent. It will have an effect on reducing contact and reducing the transmission, given the limitations, which I've already outlined, of contact tracing and testing, even in the most, even if there were no constraints on laboratory test availability. And the reality is there are constraints. They exist. And so we do have to work. We have to absolutely try and upscale testing as much as we can, but acknowledge that there exists challenges in this regard.
How many test kits do we have as a country?
So I don't have that information to hand at this point.
If we need to do as much testing as possible, as you've just articulated so beautifully why it's important, because that ultimately is the opportunity that a lockdown allows, how quickly is the state able to understand from an auditing point of view what the needs are in terms of testing kits? Because we are now there, aren't we, where it really is about the stock.
Yeah, so I think I'm really positioned to provide technical advice. What I can say is that there's a very large group that is addressing testing and the upscaling of testing. I think Eusebius, it was a bit of I certainly did not say that the lockdown has been done in order to facilitate testing. I think what I did say is that the testing and contact tracing is another arm of control in addition to the lockdown. The lockdown is designed to reduce contact between people and reduce the spread within the community and is an impactful intervention that will flatten the curve. That the testing is another strategy in our armamentarium along with other strategies as well, such as what I've heard beautiful ads as you were in the lead up in terms of informing people. It's really, really great. There's this cough hygiene, sneeze hygiene, stay home when you're sick, all of those messages. Also, those are impactful messages. They can, if we all do our part, reduce the spread of the virus in communities.
I want to know also what our capacity is to be able to process tests that do get done. Let's imagine we have as many test kits as we want with a magic wand, which we don't have. Professor Cohen, we have many anecdotal reports from some of our listeners, one or two people I personally know, who have sometimes waited up to 6 days before they got the result of having been tested for COVID-19. What is fact and what is fiction? Are our labs under enormous strain? And I ask that because as lay people, some of us fear that when we get the daily tally of infected numbers of South Africans or persons within our borders, that the numbers are 5 days old.
So I think, there's a few questions in there. I think absolutely it's true that the laboratory system has been under strain, and there have been challenges. While I've indicated that there is a very big national strategy aimed at increasing testing, we certainly expect over the coming days that the laboratory system, in the short term, is under strain, and it will be under strain certainly for the next few days. And absolutely, it's not just. So I think there is a lot of capacity to upscale. This country has a history of upscaling massively testing for other diseases such as tuberculosis. tuberculosis, such as HIV, through the National Health Laboratory Service. And so there is, you know, we do have ability and experience in rolling out massive laboratory testing programs, but this needs to be in the done in the context of the global limitations in terms of supply of reagents, etc., and obviously implemented in a way absolutely that it has reporting as part of that. So it doesn't help to do a test if you don't get the results back.
Exactly.
And then there's another big arm in terms of the data management and getting the results back, and obviously that's part of the integrated system. I think your second part of your question was about the lag in the case numbers. So I think, absolutely. Remember, this disease has a long incubation period and generation time compared to a disease like flu. So it's really 5 to 7 days from one generation to the next. So the numbers that we're seeing today actually, and you know, up to 14 days, hence our recommendation to self-isolate for 14 days. So what we're seeing now really reflects what was happening in the country 14 days ago, in fact, or up to, you know, over the last 2 weeks. So the trends in case numbers are not, it's very important people understand that they don't reflect what's happening or our interventions now. They reflect the past, and I think this is a challenge, right, because as we implement interventions, it's not like you see an immediate effect with a disease like this, which has a relatively long generation time. I think the other point to note is that absolutely there are challenges in testing. There have been delays, and so certainly the case numbers reported are not all, you know, all the cases. We acknowledge there will be cases that are samples that are still in the process of being tested. Mm. And in addition, as I've mentioned, there are people out there who have not come into the net. Mm-hmm. We know this. There will be people who are infected with coronavirus who have not been tested. And that, I think, is why it is so important that if you are sick, you need to self-isolate at home for 14 days and not spread the virus on. And that is why this national lockdown is such an impactful intervention, because it will reduce the contact between everybody, whether they know they're sick or not, and that will flatten the curve. And that's why we all need to really comply and participate and understand that it is our contact. When we touch and kiss and hug people, when we go to bars, when we're not supposed to be doing that, when we have this type of social interaction, it undermines the national effort, and we all need to play our part.
12 minutes before 10, we'll take a break, and then we'll be asking a few more questions of Professor Cohen on the other side of this.
Socialdistance.co.za.
The only place to go while at home. Social distancing.
Okay, some of you are asking, when does the lockdown start? Because you don't know what the 26th midnight means. So the answer is, and Professor Cohen can tell me whether I'm right, if you put it practically, it's Thursday night, 1 minute into Friday, as it were. If you think about it in those terms. But it doesn't mean you must relax in the meantime. You should be doing physical distancing already. You should be doing the right thing immediately. And the start of the official lockdown is not when you should start doing the right thing. Professor Cohen?
Yeah, so I absolutely agree. I think the president quite wisely has given a few days for businesses to prepare, for people to prepare, childcare, transport, other things, especially essential. The lockdown will have an impact on essential workers, and then they need to make arrangements, for example, for their children to be looked after, or for and businesses need to make contingency plans. So that's why it's scheduled to happen on Thursday night. But absolutely, on an individual level, the things we can do to reduce contact with others, that can start today and should have already started, in fact. And I think many people have already started.
In terms of self-isolation and also physical distancing, in our highly dense areas, such as in our townships, are you concerned, and what is the NICD and your peer professionals' viewpoints about the feasibility of us being able to maximally, as in terms of our civic duty, being able to comply with physical distancing, given the reality of housing, people live on top of each other, and the incredibly credible levels of population density in many parts of our cities?
Yeah, so absolutely, UCBS. I think this is a real challenge, and it's a challenge faced by our society and many other societies such as ours. And I think, you know, what really the advice we're giving is to do as much as is practically possible in your circumstance. I think what is very, very helpful is for people to understand how the virus is transmitted, and so what are the types of actions that we can take in terms of social distancing. I think understanding about the 1 to 2 meter distance between people, especially if somebody's sick, can allow one to as much as possible make provision, for example, the sick person to stay 1 meter away from others if it is possible within your social circumstance. Understanding that the virus is spread by droplets over 1 to 2 meters and by physical contact, lets us know that we can talk to the neighbor over the fence, but we shouldn't be kissing and hugging them, and that we do need to think about our children who are very much accustomed to mixing with one another, in the street or in the community. And I think one needs to, even this type of idea places challenges in terms of understanding a social unit. When we say self-isolate in your home, one needs to think, and I think everybody needs to do this, who are we going to be in the social unit? Is it going to be all the people on the stand, or is it going to be, are we going to self-isolate as a community, et cetera? But it involves engaging with those with whom you live closely and coming together on a common agreement that as much as possible, your social unit will self-isolate, and then within the home really trying as much as possible to do this. But absolutely, these are intrinsic challenges. But I don't think that the challenges should mean that we don't try to do it. What we know is that everybody within their ability, in their own personal circumstance, if they restrict their contact with others and specifically the types of contact that lead to transmission, overall, if we all do it together, mm-hmm. the number of contacts will drop and the virus spread, rate of spread will drop, and the curve will flatten. So absolutely there are challenges, but those challenges shouldn't hold us back from doing the best we can absolutely. And acknowledging we may have limited circumstances.
Prof Cohen, what is the truth, if there is a truth, about masks and gloves? Do they help or do they not help?
Yeah, so I think again, so much in the media showing people wearing masks, and also certainly in my own experience in recent days, also a lot of people now in our communities, you see them wearing masks and gloves. So maybe start with gloves. I think gloves offer no benefit above hand washing and regular disinfection if you understand that getting the virus on your hand, you will not be infected as long as you disinfect it off or you wash your hands before you bring your hands up to your nose and mouth, because the virus passes through the mucous membranes, the wet surfaces on our nose, our mouth, our eyes, into the body. There are not receptors on the skin. So if you go to the supermarket and you touch the trolley and you don't touch your face and then you disinfect, the virus will not infect you. And if you wear gloves, while certainly gloves do provide a physical barrier, because there are complexities in taking those gloves on and off, you may have a false sense of safety and touch your face with your gloves. The evidence suggests that when actually used, gloves are not better than washing your hands or disinfecting. With regard to masks, again, while you do see people wearing masks in order to protect themselves against acquiring infection, there are some studies that have looked at this, but there's not any overwhelming scientific evidence to support that wearing a mask will protect you from acquiring the infection. And much more important is really trying to keep a distance between yourself and other people. There is, however, evidence that if you are sick, if you are coughing and sneezing and you wear a mask, you will reduce the release of droplets and spread to others. Now, that's very important, because when you see people in the shop who are wearing a mask, maybe that's because they're sick. But, of course, they really shouldn't be going to the shop at all. So if you're sick, more important than wearing a mask is staying home, especially under these circumstances of a national shutdown. So yes, wearing them in the house, certainly if you're sick, wearing a mask can reduce the spread to others in the home. And then, very importantly, masks are needed for healthcare workers. They're special masks called N95 masks for healthcare workers that do aerosol generating procedures, and also sometimes healthcare workers might do other procedures where they need the normal surgical mask because they're getting intensely exposed to the patient. And really, we need to keep our supply of masks for the healthcare workers who really need them, because as this epidemic progresses, clearly it's the frontline healthcare workers that are going to be bearing the brunt of this, and they need to be protected and have the appropriate personal protective equipment.
Do we have enough personal protective equipment for healthcare workers that are our frontline soldiers in this battle?
Yeah, so again, that's an operational question. I think what I can answer more generally is that there is a global shortage of personal protective equipment. It is, and it has been exacerbated by the shutdowns in trade and transport, and particularly the shutdown in China, although China is really coming back strongly in terms of getting back into the market, producing personal protective equipment, and really sending it, particularly really focusing, I think, on countries such as South Africa, where they see that we could really benefit from this. There is a national committee that is really tasked just with looking at personal protective equipment and ensuring the supply and working with partners. So obviously personal protective equipment is something we need now, and we're going to need it more throughout the epidemic. It's a global challenge, and there is a national strategic group that's really trying to address the supply in a very rapidly changing environment in terms of international travel, and also different countries going into lockdown and others coming out of lockdown like China.
Second last question. Can you, in very simple medical terms, explain to the average layperson, myself included, why we shouldn't be touching our faces? And also, if I wash my hands first, can I then get rid of an itch?
Yeah, absolutely. So yes, the second part is true. If you wash your hands first for 20 seconds, as recommended, with soap and water, then you can get rid of an itch. The reason why we mustn't touch our faces is because the virus, the way it gets into your body, is through what we call the mucous membrane. So that's the wet surface in your mouth, your nose, potentially your eyes. That's where the receptors are that the virus can attach to get into your body. And so if you get the virus on your hand, it can't pass through your skin. But if you then bring your hand up to your face and you touch your mucous membranes or your face, then that's how the virus gets into your body. And that's why we mustn't touch our faces. If you wash your hands or you disinfect with alcohol-based hand rub appropriately as recommended, then absolutely that's why you can touch your face. And that's why, if for example, we'll all have to go shopping, even in the national lockdown. Simple hand hygiene, washing before you go to the shops. Most of the shops have sanitizer you can use during your shop, making sure you don't touch your face and making sure you really wash your hands well when you get back from the shop. All of those things, so long as we can break the virus getting from the environment to our faces, we will protect ourselves. And then that's really, really important for people to understand.
We'll leave it there for today. Brilliant, as always, and so much important information. Professor Cheryl Cohen, thank you for your generosity, as always.
Thanks for having me, Eusebius.
It is it's a pleasure and very important at this time. And thanks for the work that you guys do at the NICD, always, but particularly now. Professor Cheryl Cohen is co-head of the Center for Respiratory Diseases and Meningitis at the National Institute for Communicable Diseases.